All right. Hello and welcome to Day One Patch Podcast, episode 478. I'm your host, Ryan Johnson. Tim Spence, how you doing?
I am here.
When's the last time you bought something on eBay?
Not that long ago, actually. But before that, it was a really long time. I finished off my Zelda Amiibo collection on eBay by buying the 30th anniversary edition Pixel, like original Legend of Zelda Link Amiibo. But before that, it was a really long time.
Matt is also with us. Matt, when's the last time you bought something from eBay?
I believe I bought my mother's Christmas presents off eBay for this just past Christmas, a couple months.
Was it epic?
It was an antique like Raggedy Ann clock from like the 70s.
Last thing I bought was Rebecca on Blu-ray, because for some reason Rebecca was not available on any streaming service or even available for purchase on somewhere like Apple TV or whatever. I had to buy the Blu-ray used, though, because if I bought a brand new copy, it was like $70-something on Amazon.
Oh my god. Well, it's because they go in and out of print, right? Because like the different houses will print them. And then if it goes out of print, then if they're all sold out, then they're all sold out. You have to hope there's going to be another printing run.
I'm surprised whatever studio this was it MGM or something? I'm surprised they issued a Blu-ray, but never put it up on digital services. That's weird, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah, that's a little strange.
So you had to make the HD file for the Blu-ray anyway. Why not just, you know, send it off? Anyway,
although we had that problem, we tried to watch The Driver. I had to get it imported and crap.
It's just frustrating when like we live in this world where like everything should be accessible and some things are just like hidden, you know.
It's one of those situations where like adding additional steps is easy, so we just add additional steps to everything, and then it just makes everything hard again.
Yeah. All right. Let's start with fun facts. Matt, you got a new fun fact? Video game fun fact for us?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, I teased it last week. Are you guys ready for, what are we calling this section, this segment? We got a name for it?
Matt's Video Game Fun Facts Fantastical
Extravaganza.
Rolls off the tongue. Anyway, Mercenaries 2, I think it's called Mercenaries 2, A World in Flames, came out a long time ago. I believe it was 2008. But before it came out, they had a promotion for the game, as many games do. But this one was a physical in-person one. Basically, they were giving away free gas for a limited time at a couple of gas stations. The gas stations were completely decorated in the Mercenaries 2 theme. So they had like little posters up. I saw a picture of like the gas prices, which are all zeros in the mercenary style. They had this like big sort of poster thing around the sort of trim of the roof of the gas station. They had all that stuff. And to top it all off, you could actually have a quote unquote mercenary pump the gas for you, because there were paid actors all dressed up in character doing that for you. So the promotion was held in both LA and London, and I couldn't find anything about the LA one other than when it happened. Apparently there was no problem. However, the London promo ended in chaos and gridlock. So I have a few quotes here from The Escapist, and they read, beginning at 6:30 a.m. local time and running for 4 hours, drivers who could make it to the last stop garage in North London were given roughly $70 or £40 worth of free gas. Security personnel ended up having to be brought in to deal with the mess, including not just people looking for free gas, but also local residents who had difficulty just getting out of their driveways due to the gridlock. One local woman described it as totally irresponsible, adding, "What an extraordinary thing to do. I can't believe they've been allowed to do this. This area is usually very quiet, but look at it now. There's cars queuing everywhere. It's just creating unnecessary problems." So basically, just everyone, of course, it's 2008. So it's the financial crisis. Things are happening all over the world. It's free gas on the best of days, so financial crisis or not. And so it just caused absolute chaos in North London. Now, due to this chaos, this promotional event was unfortunately forced to shut down only 4 hours into actually opening the pumps up, and only $20,000 of free fuel, and I believe out of a total of what they expected to be about $40,000 of free fuel, was actually distributed. So it got cut short by about half. The government got involved here as well. An MP named Lynn Featherstone demanded an apology, saying, quote, trying to recreate the Venezuelan style fuel riots on the streets of London is completely irresponsible and downright dangerous. Whilst a lucky few might have gotten some free petrol, thousands of local residents have faced misery on their daily journeys this morning, and they deserve an apology. I looked up what these fuel riots were, and there was a couple of different riots that happened in Venezuela. However, the one I believe they're referring to is what is referred to as the gas riots against their leader at the time, Hugo Chavez. This strike is what it was referred to as, basically caused the country's fuel supply to dwindle their exports from what was normally 3 million barrels a day to only 160,000. There was also a bunch of other stuff. I think there was some food shortages and those type of things, but I only touched on this part as a part of my research. But that's, there you have it. Mercenaries 2 had a massive promo at least a couple of gas stations, and unfortunately the game kind of disappointed players anyway. At the end of the day. So
this was Mercenaries 2, you say?
Yeah, Mercenaries 2, A World in Flames, I believe, is the subtitle.
I think it's the only one I played, and I really enjoyed it. Now, I was a kid though.
it's not necessarily bad. I think it's just that, so Mercenaries 1 was completely unique. It was, I mean, even the TV ads were like, you know, call in airstrikes, blow shit up, blow buildings up, level cities. And that's exactly what it was like. You could blow up most any building, even like really hard point areas like bunkers. You could, you know, keep attacking. And after like 100 attacks of like an airstrike or something, it might go down. But then eventually, you know, through upgrading your stuff and unlocking new things, you find like a bunker buster, and then you can just bunker bust these sort of like hard point locations.
Yeah.
And the game was like really gritty. Like it's a very depressing North and South Korea landscape. You know, war has stricken the area, and you're just a mercenary working for all the factions, which includes the Russian mafia, the South Koreans, China, and the UN. And you're basically just doing missions for these people to make money. Like you're going after what they call the Deck of 52, which is a bunch of, I think it's like the, in the game, it's like the North Korean, like kind of structure. So like General Song is the top. And then there's all these other, different, you know, whatever, like government staff and that type of thing. But then when Mercenaries 2 comes around, like Mercenaries 2, yeah, it's about Venezuela. And it's like, it is supposed to be about a serious situation, like kind of like what happened in real life. It kind of seems like, however, it's kind of like a very light take. Like I remember one of the missions was quite literally, drive this pickup truck that doesn't have like a tarp over the back over its bed. And there's a whole bunch of birds in the back, and you're supposed to drive up and down this hilly road and don't let as many of them as you can spill out. So it's just sort of like, okay, so it's okay. Like the game's not horrible, but it just is not the same as sort of like the gritty, war torn, dreadful sort of like more realistic take, I suppose, on war as the first one was.
So they gave away free gas.
Yeah, free gas. So each person was able to get about $70, or at the time, about 40 Great British pounds worth of free gas. And I found one source that said they were trying to give away a total of approximately $40,000 of gas. However, only 20,000 was given away in the London promotion. And I did look up whether the LA promotion ended in disaster, and I just saw that people basically, they just reported that it was happening. I didn't hear anything about gridlock or a disaster or anything like that. And hilariously, a bunch of the citizens in London that got free gas, like there was an article I found that just had a list of quotes where they were just fine with the promotion. When approached, it wasn't like they were like, yeah, you know, that promotion was pretty bad, but I got my free gas. It just seemed like they were just like, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, all in all, like they showed up early, they got their free gas, they got the hell away from there, and that was it. One person said they're going to pick the game up. So.
One person did say they were going to pick the game up.
Yeah, well, one of the quotes was like, "I'm definitely picking the game up," something like that. So,
I guess you're going to mostly get people who don't care about the game getting free gas, right?
I guess it depends on where they advertised that was happening.
That it was free,
because how many people are going to drive by and believe that it's free and also need gas and then a time to stop. And then if you only advertise in like gaming magazines, I guess, at the time.
I guess my question is, did you have to say something to get the gas, or was it just free to any customer that showed up?
It didn't say that. It didn't say anything like that. It was just like, from what it sounded like, it was just supposed to be sort of like these mercenaries had taken over these gas stations you know, quote unquote. And then you get, yeah, you get like free gas pumped. There's some pretty funny like photos from the era. And I mean, the few I've seen are like very small. Like obviously it's 2008. So people are probably taking them with cell phones. And I mean, some cell phones were taking like 320 by 480 photos back then. So you're getting some pretty funny low res photos for the time.
Yeah.
But that's Facts with Matt, or whatever you guys called this segment.
Facts with Matt.
Fantastical facts with Matt to the max.
Here we go. Matt's max facts.
I don't mind that.
Matt's max facts. That's hard to say.
Every time we say it, we'll just fuck it up.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the news. Dragon's Dogma in the news, and not just for being released.
It's out, but at what cost?
Players discovered its microtransactions. Now, this comes to us from Forbes here. Though a list of microtransactions was provided to reviewers, they were not live during that process, and as such, were never mentioned. But now that Dragon's Dogma 2 has launched to the public, players are treated to a lengthy list of extra paid content that includes things like new fast travel points or character redesigns. The full reveal of these microtransactions has led to a flood of negative reviews from players, where they now stand at mixed on Steam, in contrast to the game's 87 to 90 Metascore between console and PC. But it's split the player base more generally as to whether this is a big deal or not. One side believes that we have seen this kind of thing many times before, both in other single-player games, but also even in Capcom games like Monster Hunter and Resident Evil, where those microtransactions drew fewer complaints. Additionally, it's also the case that many items being sold, like fast travel points, revive stones, and character redesigns can be found in the game itself, and you're just paying for the extra ones here. I've not actually like booted this up or anything, or even bought it, but I'm having a hard time imagining what's so offensive about these microtransactions.
It's funny because some people are acting like it's a new thing. This is not a new thing to Capcom games specifically. Like Monster Hunter World also was flooded with microtransactions after it came out. But in that, they were always like cosmetic items. Like you're not getting anything that helps you in the game. What was nice about those games specifically, and like Capcom games as well, is like when those games were doing well, you know, they would just be like, you know, congrats on, or rather like, thank you for being part of the, you know, 1 million players. Here's a bunch of like monster parts and materials and stuff and supply items and things as like a thank you for supporting the game. Right.
You're right.
But with Dragon's Dogma, the stuff is like in-game currency. It's like different currencies. It's customization options, which again, Monster Hunter is also guilty of. Like there's microtransactions that you can buy that let you redesign your hunter in Monster Hunter World, which is like, for some people, it's extremely important that they want their character to look a very certain way, or, you know, they get bored of the way their character looks and so they want to design a different character, but without losing all of that character's progress. I'm personally of the camp that like every game that lets you design your character should also let you redesign your character whenever you want, because
the charge for that sounds crazy.
The charge for that, is silly, and, you know, Capcom has a history of charging for it. But I've seen multiple like people covering this particular story, and the aggregate seems to be that it almost looks like the microtransactions were done in like a malicious compliance kind of way, because it's not just that you've got a couple of different microtransactions listed in the store. You've got like, you know, the port crystals or the wake stones that like let you revive your character if you fall in combat. There's like not just one of those you can buy for $2 or whatever it is. There's like six separate ones, each one individually listed.
A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah, all listed in the store page. And then there's all the different chunks of currencies that are all the like same price or different prices for the different size chunks of currency. But like you said, this is all stuff that you can get in game anyway in like the first 3 hours. So it really seems like it was just slapped on after the fact. When Capcom went to the devs and they were like, this game needs to have microtransactions, make it work. And so they just, in sort of a malicious compliant kind of way, they just threw stuff in there that are effectively useless microtransactions, because you don't need to buy gold in a game where you're going to be flooded with gold a couple of hours in if you're like collecting loot and selling it.
This almost feels like, I don't know. It's all. It's like they just these are there for the people who don't want to find them in game. They just want to get them instantly. Because Assassin's Creed games often have stuff like this too. Well, they'll sell in game currencies or in game crafting items in like bundles as a microtransaction.
Yep.
And it's just like, oh, that's just for people who don't want to spend the time collecting all that or grinding it out or whatever. And so they're just giving them a way to fast track that if they want to spend the money. That's all this seems like to me.
But again, it's like that, but even more ridiculous, because like if you play the game, even for just a couple of hours, you're going to get all that stuff anyway. Like I understand if it's like crafting materials for, you know, making stuff in like an Assassin's Creed game where it's like, I don't want to have to go to this area and grind out, you know, hunting these particular creatures over and over and over again until I get the thing that I want. Or especially if it's something that's like RNG based, it's like, I don't want to spend the time to collect what could potentially be a really long or really short process, depending on how your RNG is. And, you know, if the game is designed around that, making something harder to get, but you can just buy it with microtransactions, that's super scummy. And that's a different conversation entirely. But this one is like, specifically, you're already going to get these. So like, why not? Or like, why even bother having them as a microtransaction?
The argument I do understand is that you're paying full price for this game, and then it has microtransactions on top of it. That is kind of annoying, but again, it's happened, so I'm not sure why people are surprised to see this.
But just because it's happened doesn't mean that it's acceptable.
No, I know. This got news articles written about it, whereas Assassin's Creed doesn't, you know. So something triggered some people for some reason.
I think it's just because, if it wasn't going to be Dragon's Dogma, it was going to be somebody else. It just happened that Dragon's Dogma was the one caught in the crossfire this time.
Yeah, very bizarre.
But anyway, the game itself is very good. Like, I've seen no complaints about the game at all. It's just people complaining about the microtransactions. So
I was going to say, is it because like people really are into Dragon's Dogma too? Like, it, I know that people like Assassin's Creed, but Assassin's Creed is sort of like, oh, another Assassin's Creed game came out. Is there just so many of them? Whereas Dragon's Dogma is, you know, an old game, and now we finally get a second one.
And a game that's been like special to people too.
It's funny because it's a very like niche game. It's a very like cult classic. The people who like Dragon's Dogma like love Dragon's Dogma, but it's not, the first game is not a super popular RPG.
Right.
But you know what's like kind of nice about this whole thing is that, you know, in the spirit of no such thing as bad press, Dragon's Dogma 2, with how popular it's been on like social media and everything, it's probably going to bring a lot of new people to the series that it otherwise might not have had.
So are you planning on picking this up, Tim?
Yeah, I'll be getting it for sure.
Here's another problem. In Canada here, it's $94.99.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like $100.
More than 100.
It's really the only thing that I can like justify spending $100 on anymore is like big RPGs.
Jeez. It's just crazy though. But, all right. I think we're just going to have to deal with microtransactions forever now, right?
Absolutely.
People will complain about them, but I don't think they're going away.
I like my one comment that I saw that I thought was funny, I chuckled about, was the somebody was like, remember when we gave Bethesda a hard time over $250 for horse armor?
That was the start, though. That was the dawn of it.
That was it. Buying a full price game and then spending more money for other things.
There was like a producer or something that recently said that if you don't put microtransactions in your game, you're an idiot. Or something like
that. Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't remember who that was.
But you're just leaving money on the table at that point. And so it's like, people are going to pay for it, so why wouldn't you do it?
God, it's their favorite phrase, isn't it? Just leaving money on the table, bro.
But from a business perspective, it is kind of true, because you can do it in a way where it's just cosmetics and people will buy them. I've purchased cosmetic, you know, microtransactions myself. And so you'll make just a little bit more just by having them in there.
It's the same as saying, like, you can take advantage of people who are vulnerable to predators. Like, yeah, it's true. That doesn't necessarily mean it's good.
This is just selling stuff. I don't.
Yeah, to people who are vulnerable to buying like useless microtransactions is what I'm saying. Like,
I don't know. The sky
is blue and water is wet. Like,
But also, I mean, technically, the video games aren't necessary either. I mean, like selling the video game and having constant sales on the PlayStation Store is also kind of predatory in that way. Like, how many people have bought stuff on Steam sales that they don't play? It's kind of like the same sort of thing.
No, I disagree. I think there's a lot more value in a whole game versus one small microtransaction in another game that's purely designed to like take advantage of the people who would spend too much money on, like, you know, a game that lets you buy gacha you know, chances at stuff, like the gambling type of microtransactions. It's just like, oh yeah, we can make it, you can make a bunch of money off of loot boxes. You may as well have them. It's like, well, people have gambling problems, and this is specifically targeting people who can't stop themselves from just one more roll, and yeah. Then they just wash their hands of any responsibility and just say, ah, oh, well, you know, we encourage people to buy loot boxes responsibly and not to spend beyond their limit. We just put it out there for the people that want it, and then meanwhile they're selling bundles that cost like $150. It's like that's not for the vast majority of your audience. That's specifically for the people that, you know, either have way more money than they can ever spend in their life, or the people that have a serious gambling problem.
Especially if the chance is like super low, and like you raise the chances and crap like that on like the chances spins. That are, yeah, well, if it's like you have to pay the $150 and then it raises your chance from like 1% to 3% or something like that.
Yeah.
The thing that really pisses me off about skins in particular is just it's not balanced with the game itself. So you'll buy like an Assassin's Creed game, you can find outfits and armor in the game. So the game already ships with like a couple dozen armor sets. So you buy an $80 game, you know, a couple dozen armor sets, but then to purchase one in the store is $30. It's like, how is that, you know, a third of the actual base game price for one skin when there's dozens already in the game?
I've been heard it justified because the artist put that work in, but
they put it in on the other ones.
That's what I was going to say, is like the artist also probably made the mountains and stuff that's in the game as well. And in addition, there is a difference to selling one-on-one with somebody. Like if the person is drawing one picture for you and that picture is the only one.
Yes, that's true.
Then that's, $1,000 or something. Versus if this person is drawing one, but printing a million and then selling a million.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to make more selling that 1 million copies at $1 than they would the $1,000 to one person. So
a game like might sell, 7 million copies, but of the skins in the store, they'll only sell 10,000.
Oh no, but
so it marks up the value.
No, I'm still with you.
Oh,
I'm still with you. I'm saying that
this is the justification.
No, because like I'm saying, like even though like you're right, like if it sells a million copies and then only 100,000 people would buy, that's still selling en masse. Like,
yeah.
I'm talking like when I'm talking not selling en masse, I'm talking you're selling it to one or two people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're selling it to 100,000 people, that's pretty much en masse. But especially if it's an add-on.
It feels like they're trying to take a digital thing and be like, if we make more of this digital thing, you know, it's like the same reduction in costs that you get with manufacturing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
If you order 10,000 t-shirts compared to 5, the 10,000 per t-shirt is going to be cheaper, you know, than buying the 5. But digital is just digital. It just sits there in the store. It's already also on the game you have downloaded because you can see it.
It's also a subjective conversation, too, because we're talking about the inherent value of art, right? Which is like,
oh, sure.
There's another like factor to it, right? Like there's an inherent value to a physical t-shirt, right?
Yeah.
It's got a utility to it.
Yeah.
As well as like its function and form, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, art is kind of just there to be enjoyed. So there's
the problem is these publishers aren't selling games as pieces of art. They're selling them as products, you know, to make a profit for their shareholders. But the artists work for them who designed these things. Right. That would be an interesting thing, actually, if I don't know if this would ever happen. Maybe this was supposed to be the metaverse. Maybe this was supposed to be NFTs or whatever. But it would be cool if you could hire a third party artist to design, well, I guess, kind of mods, really.
Yeah.
To design items for your games and stuff.
Third party developers for your game.
Yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. But that's, I guess that's mods. Yeah, there you go. All right. Moving on. This one's kind of crazy. Sony is reportedly pausing PSVR 2 production to clear excess inventory. This is from The Verge. After producing in excess of 2 million units of its latest virtual reality headset, Bloomberg is reporting that Sony is hitting pause on production to try and shift its unsold inventory. The PlayStation VR 2 launched last February for $549 as an accessory for the PlayStation 5, but IDC data suggests that shipments have declined each quarter since. Bloomberg suggests that the problem is lack of content for the headset. The PSVR 2 is compatible with a handful of AAA games, including Horizon Call of the Mountain, Gran Turismo 7, and entries in the Resident Evil series, as well as a range of smaller titles. But at $549, the headset costs more than the PS5 itself, so expectations are high. Bloomberg notes that Meta and Apple have faced similar content challenges with their own headsets. That does seem to be the biggest problem with this thing not selling, is like I can't name you other than the games listed, what a PSVR 2 title would be that I want, you know. But to actually pause production, what do you guys think is, do you think the PSVR 2 is going to die or no? Is there hope?
Does PSVR 1 die technically, like before the PSVR 2?
It kind of did, right?
It kind of did, but they were still around as far as I know. Although maybe they weren't around and no one was looking. So I'm not really sure where that.
Well, that Iron Man game launched pretty late into the life cycle of that, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
But that might have been one of the last.
This is a heavy thing to add as an accessory, though. This is one of the reasons why, like, many iPhone users, for example, don't have Apple Watches, because the Apple Watch is an accessory to a $1,000+ device, depending on how much you're subsidized by your carrier or whatever model you're buying. This is a big purchase, again, as an accessory, to then have to buy games for it. And then the games also are, well, I don't know if they're necessarily always full retail, because I know games will be variable, whatever, but you know, it's probably going to be pretty easy to spend $100 in games for this thing. So now we're looking at not $549, but $649. And then how long are those games going to last? And you can only use it on your PS5. So you have to make sure you have your, you know, $500 or $600, depending on where you live, PS5 as well.
That's the crazy part, is you need the expensive PS5, the expensive headset, and an expensive game. Just one game, just one expensive game. To even get like a value out of this thing, that's
for just one experience. Yeah, it's a big price tag,
and I wonder what the ratio is of how often, like, people who are like serious about VR, how often are they playing VR games compared to, you know, traditional games? Is it even that much? Like, Matt, how often do you play your Meta Quest?
I haven't played it in a little while, but I used to just kind of like do entertainment stuff in there, watch videos. Like, I definitely tried some games and stuff like that, but I just haven't gone back to gaming with it. But I, you know, I've been messing around with some entertainment things, but not for the last maybe like 2 months ish. I haven't really touched it. That's pretty standard for me, though. Like, I'll play a bunch on my Steam Deck and then stop for a month or two, and then I'll play a bunch on my PlayStation and I'll stop for a month or two, short of multiplayer games kind of thing. And like, I kind of just jump from title to title, so that's, you know, kind of par for the course. But I mean, my Meta Quest was also like $200.
That's true.
Yeah. You know, oh, I got it as a gift, but like, that's what it was at the time. Yeah. 200 or 250 Canadian. So, like, I mean, I've definitely used it for more than its value so far. So I'm not exactly, you know, cheesed by that at all. The versatility of this thing might also be hurting it, because it doesn't work on a computer.
Which is what they're adding that support later on. But will it be enough? Like, if it had that at launch, maybe it would have sold a lot better and had some more staying power. But them adding it after the fact, I don't know if that's really going to pick up sales. You know what I mean?
People have already heard about it. The media cycle is done on it.
Yeah.
And they've forgotten about it. Like, it's totally reasonable to, if they had PSVR 2, have a really smooth experience with the PlayStation 5, but then also work on the PC. It's totally reasonable to have all your commercials really focus on the PlayStation 5 aspect, because you want people to buy the console, but and show how smooth it is to integrate with it. But then also say, by the way, you can use this on PC. Because anyone who's going to buy like VR for PC is going to have their ear to the ground a little bit, right? And then they're going to be interested, because it's a niche within a niche, yeah, at that point. Because like, if you really think about it, like, the appeal of Game Pass is like they're like, hey, we got like 100, you know, 100+ games on there, but you're not playing 100+ games each month. Like, there's no way, you know. Mm-hmm. Now there's other appeals, like everyone has Game Pass, you all have the same co-op games and the same PvP games. That also helps a lot. Also, it's immensely cheaper if you do churn through games, immensely cheaper, especially here in Canada. So it totally makes sense. But still, like on the tin of Game Pass, it's like, this is how much it is a month, and there's over 100 games. Well, you ain't playing even probably 10 a month, so relax a little bit.
I think the biggest oddity about all this is that Sony did not have more first-party titles. And it's like, the one first-party title they had was Horizon Call of the Mountain, and I believe they either shut down that developer or like just kind of got rid of a lot of employees or something. But it's very weird that they don't have a list of first-party games for it.
What other... I'm trying to think of, like, what first-party titles were for the PSVR, the first one.
I can look that up.
Because I definitely saw, like, there's a bunch of, like, just VR games in general. There's Walking Dead, Saints and Sinners. There's Arizona Sunshine, I think. Arizona Sunshine's a zombie game. There's the Iron Man game. And these are just headliners I'm listing, not an exhaustive list. But well, I can't think of, like, there's no Last of Us, is there? Like, there's,
no,
I don't know.
No. You're right. I don't actually, I'm just looking through a list of games here. I don't see a lot of any first party titles. I think one of the things they were worried about is, remember when they forced like developers to like put in motion controls for their PlayStation Move?
Yeah.
Or force them to make, you know, PSP and Vita games. And it just wasn't a very good like relationship, because like, if you don't want to make put motion controls in your games, and then you got forced to, and it make a bad experience. I almost wonder if they were thinking that, you know, some of these studios would be inspired to make a VR game, and they just weren't.
Yeah, honestly. Well, one thing that does suck is like, I hear that the I guess it's called theater mode, I'm not 100%, but on the PSVR 2, if you do play a game like Last of Us, which that is not a VR game, as far as I understand it, you can play it on like basically like a theater screen, and you can kind of like draw and reshape and resize the theater screen to within some certain parameter, I imagine. I mean, that's a pretty cool feature that I never saw marketed.
Yeah.
Like, it just, I feel like a lot of the failings of some of these products is that someone looks at it and goes, oh, it's VR, just like those Meta things, whatever, or like the Oculus. They never went anywhere. I'm out. Like, you kind of have to like really showcase this thing and show people using it in different use cases, I think. Because something like a smartphone, people understand how they use it. They got their calendar, their contacts, they text on there, the camera and blah, blah, blah. And then companies show off the new things like, hey, this is our new camera. Hey, this is our AI thing is the new thing now. But with VR, I feel like they just kind of drop the ball all the time, where they don't mention like, hey, if you don't have a TV for some reason, like you're at a dorm room or something and you have this thing, you can just use this as your TV. And like, or if you just want a massive screen that you wouldn't be able to afford, like an 80-inch monitor, you can do that with this thing. I mean, like, that's a cool feature that some people might buy it for.
Well, we even talked about that Assassin's Creed VR game that basically went unnoticed. There was no kind of social media buzz around it. No one was really talking about it because it was an exclusive game made for the MetaQuest. Why wasn't this on PlayStation? I feel like if it was on PSVR, it would have gotten more people talking about it, maybe. Even if it was on Steam, it might have gotten more people talking about it. But it just wasn't there, you know?
Niche in a niche again. Like,
that was like definitely a deal really that helped. It was definitely a deal that helped Meta, or benefited Meta more than it would have Ubisoft. You know, I don't know why they made that deal and then just like threw their hands up and been like, ah, sorry. No one cared about this game.
But what do you think about this Apple headset, like the Vision Pro? I know that people were using it. And they're like, this is revolutionary. I've heard that every single time something new comes out. I mean, I'm kind of sick of the word revolutionary.
Well, the novelty is always going to be exciting. But what matters is, does it become a regular use device? And I don't know if that is happening with that headset. I have heard that people just like it for movies. Now, that's a lot of money to spend just to have a movie headset. But people buy nice TVs for that price sometimes, you know? I think, I don't know. People have been working on VR for a long time now. And it, like, the fact that it hasn't like taken off is very suspect to me. You know, people keep talking about, where's the killer app? Where's the app that shows us you need this device? It's like, I don't know. I haven't seen it in 20 years. You know what I mean?
Is it that people don't want to change their working or playing environment? Like, it's so easy to just sit on the couch with a controller, sit at a desk with a keyboard and mouse. Are we at the point where it's like, that is what people actually want to do? They don't want to come home and then like, well, got to get this big suit headset up on my head.
Yeah.
You got to suit up a little bit, you know, and then like make sure the room's clear and, you know, make sure no one's bugging you and crap like that. Like, I know Apple has that pass through mode, and I think Meta does to an extent too, especially with the AR VR stuff, but it's still like a big headset. I mean, me personally, I mean, the HUD stuff's cool as hell, especially the AR stuff. Like, if it was as small as a set of glasses, like, that'd be cool. I'd wear that.
That's what they need to get to, where it's not this thing you have to strap over your face. It's just like, that process is just kind of just annoying, you know?
How else
if you could
just
throw it on
though,
like glasses, it'd be amazing. But I don't know how we're going to get there or when. People might divest in these things before you actually get to a size where it's reasonable, you know?
But like, how would you take a glasses experience that isn't AR, but it's VR? Because you need the isolation. That's the point of VR. You need the isolation from the environment that you're in.
Well, if you just took a pair of sunglasses and put the light shield on it, that would still be a better experience than having a whole headset, right?
Oh, like even if it was like a magnetic cover or something.
Yeah. Like the Vision Pro one is a magnetic. The light shield is magnets on to it. But
they would have to show it as in like the very first thing I'm thinking of when you were talking is like, I'm like, you're a business person. You're in a hotel room. You receive a phone call or like, you know, a text that says like, hey, hop on this video call. And you would have to have somebody in the marketing material take a set of smart glasses out, put them on, and then they somehow turn on the isolation mode, whether it's a cover or just it just automatically does it somehow. And then they're in the business call.
Mm.
It can't be like, hang on, get the big old like the big pill looking, you know, MetaQuest cover.
Yeah,
unzip
yeah.
it, take the thing, tighten it on your head. Like it's very inelegant.
Yeah.
And then it's like, hang on, guys, I'll be in about 40 minutes. So I'm just gonna yeah. fuck with my headset here. Like it has to be super seamless, I think.
Yeah, because humans want the path of least resistance, you know. And what makes the smartphone so good is it just in your hand and you touch the damn thing. You know, boom, 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 you're done. So, yeah, the setup process is still probably a pain in the ass. But anyway, all right. Oh, one last thing I did want to mention, too, is that you know, Valve has their own headset. Haven't really heard about it in a long time, but they've produced a Half-Life Alyx for it. But again, made it exclusive to, like, Steam. They never brought it to PS5. And it's like, I feel like they don't realize that you have there's a value in raising the VR gaming industry as a whole right now. Before you start making exclusives, you know what I mean? You should want Sony's PSVR headset to be popular so it increases the overall industry of VR gaming, right? So they should have put Half-Life Alyx on the PSVR.
Did we, weird question, did we do this backwards?
What?
So we're trying to get PS, like, or VR gaming, and I understand what you're saying, like, lift the industry up because, you know, it doesn't have many people, it's a niche market. Should we not be trying, or like the market, I guess, as a whole, should we not be trying to lift up VR gaming and AR gaming? Should we be trying to get AR VR for the everyman? Because if you think about it, gaming is a niche, very large niche, but it is still a niche. And so smartphones are a piece of technology that when they first came out, you know, like grandma and grandpas, you know, statistically wouldn't have one. They'd be like, I don't use them things. I use like no phone, like I use the landline or I use a flip phone is as far as they kind of got. But then once the smartphone became like a staple where it's like, it's easier to pay. Video call the grandkids is always like the meme and crap like that, right? Once it gets to that part, then now like all these older folk, let's say, who didn't have smartphones and didn't even have cell phones when they were younger, now have smartphones.
Yeah.
And there's also gaming on smartphones. So like my question is like, is this a matter of do we want to get AR, VR into everyone's hands? And by the way, this thing also does games.
I think you're probably right there, and I think that was actually Apple's strategy too with the Vision Pro, just because if you watch their initial like reveal video of it, they only mentioned gaming once. You know, it's not the main focus. They don't really talk about it much, but Apple knows how much money they can make off of games, because the App Store makes a ton of money from games. But they obviously want to sell this to the market as a whole rather than just gamers. So you might be right there that, yeah, you want the VR industry to be in everyone's house, and then that will just bring the gamers along with it.
Yeah, I think that like even wireless headsets or wireless headphones, like the AirPods is a prime example of it, of that happening, where we already kind of had earbuds. Normally they were like wireless, but they were the two earbuds themselves were connected by a tether, like a cable. And that was, but they were largely advertised to runners for the sake that they're light. Obviously, they're easy to kind of like strap on to your head, and you can also take them off and hang them from your neck, you know, when you drink water and take a break or whatever. And like, they're oftentimes waterproof, and the list goes on, but it's for the niche that is fitness. But then AirPods come out, and AirPods are like, hey, look, it's like earbuds, but they're wireless. Now it's like, oh, I'll do that. And then like, even myself, it's like I had Jaybirds. And I just like rarely used them because it was kind of a pain in the ass to have this wire. They kept like falling off my neck awkwardly, and I'm not yeah. a runner. So I was like, okay, this is annoying. But like having like a little pill case, basically like a pill shaped case, because I have Galaxy Buds, is much more convenient. And being able to just put in one or two if I want, or like take one out because it needs to charge and put the other one in, is much more convenient than the Jaybirds, where it's like, get the clip out, got to clip it in. Oh, got to plug in the micro USB, wait, you know, whatever. And I do have an older set of Jaybirds. I don't know if they've updated in the past or updated since then. But like, that is a path of least resistance, but it's also getting people involved. Cause like, I'm not in the audio niche. I really don't listen to music very much. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind just having like a podcast playing or a TV show playing out in the air. because I'm not like listening to like a private like podcast. Like, well, I don't want anyone to know about this podcast. Like, it's like fucking Game Scoop or something. Like, like who cares? So, but like, you know, sometimes if I'm like out and I don't want to like, disturb the whole like room or something, I you know, you need to have some headphones. And like, that's where I'm at now. Or I'm using Galaxy Buds, and I have like a set of Jabras, I think, as well.
I mean, I live alone and I put headphones on to listen to the podcasts just because it's like I could put my phone in my pocket and then have it all muffled and sound bad, you know, but I'll put on headphones and like do housework and whatnot, whatever, with a podcast running. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. All right, Tim, last word goes to you.
This is financial advice. Buy stock in.
Buy cryptocurrency.
Whoa. Yeah. Make sure to spend all your life savings on.
Oh my God.
Is that not cool?
I thoroughly enjoy that, though. As a joke, I thoroughly enjoy that.
All right. Last story for the week. Larian Studios won't make Baldur's Gate 3 DLC expansions or Baldur's Gate 4. That's from IGN. At a game developers conference panel today, Larian Studios founder Sven Wicke dropped something of a bombshell by revealing that the developer isn't planning to release any expansions or DLC for Baldur's Gate 3. Nor a Baldur's Gate 4. Instead, they said at the panel, Larian plans to move away from Dungeons & Dragons entirely and do something new, leaving the IP in publisher Wizards of the Coast's hands. It's unclear if Hasbro, which owns Wizards of the Coast, will look at it to another developer for a potential Baldur's Gate 4, but the property has no doubt been hugely successful for them. It was revealed last month that Hasbro has made a whopping $90 million off Baldur's Gate 3. In addition to the financial successes, Baldur's Gate 3 has been a huge hit among fans and critics, winning blah 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 blah. Anyway, Tim, you're the big Larian guy. How do you feel about no Baldur's Gate 4 or even expansions for 3?
I mean, so I read some of the interview as well, and I think Sven is entirely right in that, like, when they were making the game, they made it, as you know, if you were reading a book, to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And everything that they made with it was very intentional. And they said, even before this interview, I think he had said on like Twitter some months ago that like, if they were to make DLC, he wouldn't know what to make because they did what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Right. Like everything's already there. So, it's no surprise to me to hear that they'd have no plans for it. I think some people were still holding out hope just because they can't get enough of it. But yeah, like he said, like the IP is completely in Wizards of the Coast hands. Like it's not their call to make the DLC either. Like Wizards of the Coast would have to come to them and ask for it.
But I'm sure they want that.
I'm sure that they would want the money for it, of course, but it's really nice to see that like Sven is one of the rare people in a position of a lot of influence in the industry right now, where he's not driven by the money. In the same interview, or at least a different interview at the same conference, he expressed a lot of frustration around the greed of the industry and people demanding year over year, like doubling of profits. And he, you know, didn't mince any words in saying that, like, I'm so fucking sick of people who are so driven by greed that they're like letting games go by the wayside because they're just driven by money instead of like taking pride in your product. And yeah, which is a really refreshing take to see from somebody in a position like his, because it means that he's going to, you know, be consumer first, and he has a lot of people, you know, that are working for him so that he achieves that vision, right? I'm a big fan of Larian. Like I played a lot of Divinity as well, and of course hundreds of hours in Baldur's Gate. I'm really excited to see what they're working on next. Because it's just like, I'm a fan of the studio and I always will be, especially if they keep up the same goals and initiatives that they've had seemingly for a decade or more at this point. It's an interesting read. Like we can't obviously like cover the entire thing, but I encourage anybody who's at least somewhat interested in the state of the gaming industry and seeing valid criticism from somebody who's in the industry and has proven that you can have a breakout smash hit success of a game if you really focus on the passion and supporting the creatives on your team, instead of just trying to rehash the same formula over and over and try to push and innovate and add things of value to the industry instead of just focusing on the bottom line the entire time. But I would really recommend looking up the interview, because he's got a lot of really valid points that are worth considering.
I believe I saw an article too saying that they were like kind of starting a DLC, but then they just weren't feeling it. Kept it. They just weren't like passionate about it, and so they just said nah.
I wonder if that was a request by, you know, Wizards being like, you know, want this thing, and then they're like, well, we can try to make something, but like we already made everything we wanted to do.
What's interesting though is that I guess whatever contract they had with Hasbro or Wizards of the Coast did not include, you know, a DLC or expansion or anything like that. It was just like a one-off game deal, I guess, then, eh?
And I mean, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I'm just surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if going into the deal, any of them thought necessarily that it was going to be as successful as it ended up being.
It kind of exploded, yeah.
And, you know, that's not to say that the deal can't change in the wake of that, but they also have their own goals. You know,
yeah.
So
it's a bit refreshing having someone basically in the gaming industry say like, we want our audience to leave wanting more than being like, Baldur's Gate 3 is great, but DLC 2 friggin' sucked. Like, there's not that like, but, and then enter a negative thing.
Yeah, you want to go out on a high note, right? You don't want to just live long enough to see yourself become the villain kind of thing.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you were gonna say become Assassin's Creed.
I don't want to become Assassin's Creed.
And I say that as a fan of Assassin's Creed.
Man, I remember my first vehicle, the license plate had AC8 in it. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be wild if there actually was an Assassin's Creed 8 sometime down the line? Like, there's only, I think at the time there were like 3 or 4 games. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, man, that's crazy. That's like 5, 6, 7. What would the 8th Assassin's Creed game be? And now there's like 10. Of them or 12 or something. There's
I couldn't name them all to you.
There's an insane number of Assassin's Creed games. Yeah.
Didn't they announce 7 at that one Assassin's Creed event?
Yeah.
Is that real?
Like,
I don't know if it was
7, but it was
not all games, but like separate projects.
Right? Oh, yeah, that's I'm right. Looking this up. That's right, yeah, let's take a look. Assassin's Creed projects.
I feel like every like 10th podcast, we're like looking up at all the Assassin's Creed games. Like, this is we've been over this over and over.
it keeps coming. from Insider Gaming, just reading the headline, July 1st, 2023, Ubisoft currently has 11 Assassin's Creed games planned.
Oh my god.
11 games planned. 11 is more than like some of the longest game series.
Yeah.
Oh my god. That's, man, can you imagine like you're like Ubisoft's a big company being like, man, we got 11, like just having 11 games planned, but no, we got 11 Assassin's Creeds.
Yeah.
Like holy fuck. That's awesome. I'll play 2 of them.
Oh.
So Assassin's Creed Infinity, was that the overall project or was that a game?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that.
According to Copilot, it says Assassin's Creed Infinity is an ambitious project that aims to transform how players interact with the franchise. It'll function as an interactive hub similar to the Animus, allowing players to jump between different historical settings while progressing the modern day narrative. Man. Oh, you know what's great? I've been playing Assassin's Creed Mirage. No mention of modern day stuff at all yet. It didn't start in modern day. I haven't heard about it. You know,
You know what? I'm glad though.
Yeah.
Like the modern stuff is one of the reasons why I still haven't played my Switch version of Black Flag, because I really don't want to walk around the Abstergo offices. Like, yeah. Let's go get lunch. It's like, can we fucking not? Like, can we not? Can I not talk to you, actually? Like, I walk around with, like, the tablet in, the, like, the bottom right corner, like, as if you're holding it like this, and there's, like, the little... You can pull up your tablet and
check
your
schedule. That's your little UI, though. That's your UI, bro. It's, I know, it's immersive.
I know what it is. I don't want it there. But, so, okay, here's just a real quickly, here's the list. Assassin's Creed Mirage. Some of these are already out, obviously. Assassin's Creed Nexus. And these ones are all code names. Jade, which is a mobile game. Red, which is a single player game. Hex, but H-E-X-E, single player. Invictus, multiplayer. Nebula, single player. Raid, which is multiplayer. Echoes, which is multiplayer. Some of these are concepts and prototypes. Some of these are in pre-production. And some of these are in production. Then you have another one here. Assassin's Creed Nexus 2 VR being discussed internally. And Assassin's Creed Black Flag Remake single player, according to this article, is just greenlit. So, yeah. Assassin's Creed, baby.
I know why they chose Black Flag as the game to remake, but it just kind of makes me angry that they don't start at the beginning. You know?
It should make me angry that Skull and Bones sucks.
Well, I mean, I'm not angry, but it does suck that it sucks. But of all the games, Assassin's Creed 1 needs the remake, but it's like, that's not popular enough. You know?
That would have to be like a full remake, right?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like a full top to bottom, because that gameplay loop would not work these days.
Yeah,
for sure. Is it three mini games? It's like, go talk to your contact, three mini games, talk to your contact, gives you mission to assassinate, do big mission, go back and talk to Mualim, is that his name? Mualim? What's the guy's name?
Muad'Dib.
It's not, definitely not Muad'Dib, it's from Dune 2.
I have no idea, Matt.
I think it's Al-Mualim. I think that's actually correct.
Al-Tayyib ibn al-Had?
Maybe?
All right, well, Tim, I didn't know this, but the first two Baldur's Gates were made by BioWare? Was that correct?
I think so.
Yeah, who would you want to see make a fourth one? Ship it on back to BioWare, who's in dire straits right now?
No, man. What about freaking Dreadwolf? What about Dreadwolf? It's still coming out.
Dragon Age? Okay.
Dragon Age Dreadwolf, man.
Which, I mean, it's unfortunate that Baldur's Gate was such a success, because that game better be good.
When the hell did that Dragon Age get announced?
Like, pre-COVID.
It's another goddamn quadruple A Skull and Bones.
Yep.
Wow. Not quite, I don't think.
But anyway, I don't know. Yeah, to see make Baldur's Gate 4, Bethesda probably.
2014.
That's the
yeah, that's a hard no.
You know,
I'm wrong there. Development started right Dreadwolf, Dragon Age Dreadwolf started development in 2015.
When was it announced, though?
That I am not seeing here.
Because, like, I mean, things are announced usually started way before.
Yeah, yeah.
As you search, Ryan, I have a funny little thing that I found on this Assassin's Creed page from Insider Gaming. One comment by a person named Andy, and it says, "We are still waiting for World War II." The next line down, comments are closed.
I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily need Baldur's Gate 4, honestly. I would be interested to see who would be tasked with making it, because I can't see Wizards like letting it just die after how insanely successful 3 was. But I also can't see it happening for like a really long time.
Your Bethesda comment would be fucking hilarious if they did voiced characters like in Fallout 4. So it's either not right now, yes, or sarcastic yes. Oh,
not the friggin' Fallout 4 like decision system.
Yeah, because it's all the recorded lines, right? Which I assume is what kind of directed Fallout 4's direction in that way, because you'd have to have so many more lines recorded if you had like a, you know, branching pathways out the ass. So
2018.
Isn't Skull and Bones 2017?
Maybe
that's not good. It's another quadruple A game, boys.
I don't know how you keep these places in business. They're spending millions of dollars in development time. How do you keep them afloat when they're not producing anything?
Well, you know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, but still, it's just like, I don't. It's
EA. They have Madden and a whole bunch of other projects that are supporting them. They have the new Star Wars game. I mean,
but it makes it that much harder for Dragon Age to be profitable, doesn't it?
Wait, why is that?
Because you spent so much money developing the game.
Oh, I see. Yeah, probably.
So then it puts the whole franchise at risk.
I mean, wasn't the last game supposed to be bad or something? Or what was the last Dragon Age game good?
No, one game of the year. It was a good game.
Oh, I'm thinking Anthem.
Anthem was a disaster.
That was a disaster. Yeah, that's just straight up not Dragon Age.
Dragon Age Inquisition was definitely like a contentious one. Like, it's very different from Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2. Like, people love those games to death.
Although 2 got some backlash when it launched.
Inquisition had some controversy because it was a bit different. But overall, I think people still liked it.
I liked it. I had a good, great, great time. All right. That's it for the news. On to what we're playing. Tim, what have you been playing?
I finished the story and started the epilogue in Red Dead Redemption 2, doing the low honor playthrough today, and got an ending that I feel like a lot of people don't get, which is, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's like the low honor ending, and then you're kind of given a choice at the end, and I chose the more like bad or like greedy option, I would say. And it was an interesting ending, but I will say, compared to like the high honor playthrough ending that most people probably typically get at the end of that game, way less satisfying. Like it really was very like a bit disappointing in that, like, the things that you want to happen just don't. But they're kind of setting it up for the story that takes place in the epilogue to then like play out, which is fair. But yeah, like if I had done that as like a first playthrough ending, I would have been pretty like disappointed after how long it takes to get through that game. But going in, knowing that I was like trying to do a low honor playthrough and get like a different ending that I have ever had before, and hopefully just seeing something that, you know, maybe not a lot of people have seen aside from looking up all the endings on like YouTube or whatever. It was cool that way. But yeah, aside from that, in my spare time, just trying to keep playing my same like Remnant 2 character and get as much different gear as I can and see a bunch of different interactions in the worlds, because I definitely keep forgetting how many choices there are in this game as well, and how the way that your world rolls will determine like what gear you can get, because there's a place in Remnant, in a particular map, where you can take quest items from any other quest chain and you can offer those quest items up and get an item out of it, whether it's like a weapon or an amulet or a ring or a gun or whatever. It's there's always something for like every quest line, which is totally bonkers to me, like the amount of conditions, you know, that have to be met to get some of these things is insane. Like, not only just like having the world roll where you get that place where you can turn those quest items in, but then also getting like a different world and getting that quest line that you're trying to get. And some quest lines involve like two or three quest items in a chain sometimes, and each of those two or three different quest items also give you a different item if you turn them in at that area. It's just like, there's so goddamn much in this game that like the vast majority of players will never see. And it's like, if you're trying to do a particular build and it's like, yeah, so you need to get this item for this build, and it's super rare because you have to get the RNG of rolling the worlds this way and then also being able to like get to this point in the quest line to take this item to go back and get this thing, and then you get a ring that's a very specific effect. It's friggin' wild.
I love the build makers are just very like, yeah, so we need this ring, this like amulet, this, and like obviously they're going to be quick rapid fire like that because it's a build video. But I'm kind of thinking to myself, man, this video is, you know, 7 to 15 minutes. And how long did it take you to get all these items?
Yeah, to get all that stuff is 40 hours.
Yeah, so about 40 hours. And then you don't have enough for the next build probably either. So you're going to have to go do something else for another 40 hours to make another 7-minute video.
Yeah. I mean, you got to love a game a lot to want to make like build guides for it. And at that point, like, you know, I would hope that you have played it enough and differently each time. And you're just like a fiend for the wiki. Like, you got every wiki page favorited and you're just like, you're pulling it up every single day and trying to figure out how to do stuff. Like, the game is pretty well like solved at this point. Like, there aren't really too many items in the game anymore that people don't know how you get them or how to, like, any puzzles that are in the game that haven't been solved, because it's 7 months old now at this point. So it's been out for a while. And then the DLC content also dropped and people have already figured out everything for the DLC. So it's cool. It's such a like, it's sort of a puzzle game in that you need to like figure out exactly how to like go through these worlds to get what you're trying to get. But if you also just don't care about that and you want to just play the game on like easy or normal difficulty and just go through it, and you're totally happy to just see like whatever happens, and this is just like the playthrough we're gonna have, then it's also super viable for that, right? Like, the only reason you would ever need like a solid hyper synergized build is to play on the hardest difficulty.
Yep.
And like, not a lot of people are going to even necessarily want to do that anyway. But like, it's there for those that want to do it. And that's what's, I think, the most remarkable about the game is that like, they have the different difficulties, but there's also like a point to them. Like, you get different equipment for beating the game on harder difficulties. And, you know, the fact that the devs even made a game that's this intricate while also including separate difficulty levels, like, you know, adding at different levels of difficulty to a game is not always just as simple as, you know, enemies have X amount more health and do X amount more damage on the higher difficulties. Like, it's difficult to balance a game around different difficulties, right? So it's a lot of extra work beyond just saying like, this is the intended experience that I want the player to have.
They must have had like a, I mean, obviously they didn't go and unlock everything, so they must have had a character that had all the items. And then, you know, they themselves internally try to make builds and be like, okay, like Apocalypse is impossible, we got to dial it back. Okay, Apocalypse is very possible, we got to dial it up. Like, it would have been such a son of a bitch, especially with the different classes and the different skills and the different, like,
I mean, there's 12 different classes in the game with everything that you can unlock. So,
and combos of classes, of course, the two.
And the different multi-classes, right? Like, every combination can technically be viable. Like, there's a build there for everything, right?
Yeah.
And even within the same combos, you can have different focuses. Like, I've seen builds for... I normally play, like, Handler Engineer as my main class, character class combo. And the build that I like to play is one that's a little bit more passive, where you kind of just let your turret and dog do kind of everything, and you're just sort of there to like help clean up what, you know, maybe your turret doesn't finish off, or if an enemy goes out of line of sight and then it starts targeting a different enemy, and so then you can, you know, and if your dog isn't chasing after stuff, like you can be very just sort of like battlefield sort of commander type of role. But I've seen other builds where it's like full bleed, full skill damage, full like, you know, focusing more that like maximum DPS kind of style, right? With the rings and equipment and even down to like the specific gun choice. So, yeah, there's limitless builds, right? Just based on what people realize, what pieces of gear have different interactions with each other and synergies that on the surface might not even be obvious until you try it out.
Well, there's also like weird enemy attacks too. Like, as the DLCs come out, that one enemy that we were fighting in the sewers and other places too, that would charge you and fire those like poison balls.
Yeah.
That enemy's attacks actually were not that bad, except for the fucking poison balls. And the poison balls were wiping us every single time. And it's like, that's one enemy and one of that enemy's attacks that just absolutely friggin' took us out. It's in a DLC, so it's added on. And then there's also added on gear. So it's like, well, you know, how much more complicated is all this going to get when they start adding more DLCs? Because I believe we all bought the DLC pass as well.
Yeah, there's two more, I think they've said, coming out. So that's at least another two classes and at least another, you know, huge chunk of like gear and you know, rings and stuff. But on top of that, it's even more interaction for like quest lines between the base game and the DLC, or a DLC and a different DLC, or a thing from each DLC, and then you have to go back to a specific place in the base game. Like, there's tons of potential for even more ridiculous cryptic stuff.
It's going to be, I mean, it's going to be fun, but it's going to be friggin' wild.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what more comes out for this game, just because of the sheer level of, like, focus they have, that the devs clearly have on, like, interactivity between the different areas of the game and, like, the different items and things that work for certain bosses that don't work on other bosses. And like, this boss fight can be completely avoided if you're wearing like a particular ring and just things like that. Like, there's so much little stuff.
It's weirdly deep. Like you were saying, how many players are just going to go through and then just, you know, experience that one thing, how it happens is how it happens. I want to know how many players do that, but also don't realize that the game changes. And they just think that everyone's going to have the same experience, because there's nothing in the game that I know of that tells you, hey, by the way, this is all procedural and the experience is all different. I only noticed that like one act in, I think, like having completed one realm, because I was like, oh, how do we get past this thing? I look it up and it's like, well, it depends on how the intro was. And I was like, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean depending on how the intro is? And it's like, oh, shit, this is all different now.
It's something that I don't think was necessarily covered in like the marketing. I don't think there was a huge marketing campaign for the game. But what was covered by, like, I saw a couple of YouTubers who, I follow their stuff, and the one particularly big YouTuber had did a, they were sponsored to make a video for the game. Like, Gunfire just gave them the game and they were like, make a video, do whatever you want. Like, we're not picky. And he covered pretty extensively or repeatedly, like, this game is randomized. Like, you're not going to have the same experience that we had. You're not going to fight the same bosses in the same order. You're not going to go to the same worlds in the same order. You're going to find different gear because so much of it is randomized.
And it makes it not boring. Like, it makes the the grinding not boring. Like, how many times have we gone back through and done, like, the Nightweaver? I mean, we just did it again on stream.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that bad. Like,
yeah, it's a really, like, it's a game that you can play through once and be done with it. But it's absolutely also a game that you could just keep picking up over and over again. Like, if you like sort of like Souls-like games, because that's apparently like a genre now, just Souls-like. There's a tag for it on Steam. It's you can't sleep on Remnant 2. Like, it's really, really good. It's the first one was like kind of a proof of concept, I would say. Like, it literally was, I think it might have even been marketed by Gunfire as like a Dark Souls type game, but with guns, which other, you know, smaller studios or indie studios have tried to pull off, and like, they didn't quite lean into their own gimmick enough. And even Remnant as well, the first one, it was there, but it's like they didn't fully commit. And with Remnant 2, they were like, this is our vision, this is how it's going to be, and they fully committed to it. And I honestly think it really paid off. It's there's a level of crypticness to the game and just like interactivity that even, you know, the Souls-like game or the Souls games don't do. And it's really cool to see them like take that concept and just fully run with it.
It'll be interesting to see if any other game tries to do this, because there is like you said, like that crypticness to it. And honestly, like, because like I was running through the game with you guys on stream, but I was also running through at the time with a buddy Alex, and like I wasn't bored at all. Like, it was a totally unique experience. There was a couple times where I'm like, oh, I think there's a boss behind this door. I've been here before, obviously, but it was few and far between. It was always in a different area, right? Or it was always in a different through a different door, if it's just a dungeon door type thing. It was always something unique and different. And like, I was just, before we started looking up builds and stuff to try to play at higher difficulties, I mean, I was just content just running around, you know, more or less, and just sort of like going through the game. That's how we treated Outriders as well, until we hit a wall that was like a freaking wall, like Apocalypse is in this game. And then it was like, okay, it's time to like look up things, it's time to like learn the mechanics, and if we want to continue, we have to progress in our damage and healing, because we're just not going to get by this.
Yeah, I wonder if more games will be like this going into the future, as people just kind of, especially with gaming, like, are kind of demanding more instant gratification type stuff. Like, I kind of view this game as like bite-sized Souls-like, where you can just pick it up for 15 minutes and you can achieve a number of things in Remnant. Whereas like, if you were trying to play like a Dark Souls game or something, like, it's a bit more of a time commitment, and you kind of have to like do some things before you can do other things. And there's a lot of like running back and forth, where with Remnant, it's more kind of like go, 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 go all the time. And so, yeah, when you say like, you wonder if you'll see other games try to do the same thing in the future, I wonder if it's going to become even more bite-sized, like even smaller chunks of like gameplay loops and randomization and gratification, specifically toward the end of like it being a roguelike, right? Where you're going to have a different playthrough every time.
Yeah, because this is very much like, even though it is a sequel, this is very much like a Gen 1 product in its current form kind of thing. Because the first game didn't really have any of the procedural, I think you said, and I don't remember any of it really.
It was like pseudo-random. It's been a while since I played it. I think like the loot that you could find was always randomized, like the rings and stuff that you would find.
Okay.
But there definitely were a lot of those concepts that are like really refined in this game were concepts that were in the previous game. Like the one that I remember off the top of my head is like, there's this particular boss fight that you can have in an area that's not an encounter that you'll always come across in every playthrough, but they basically come into this like dock area, and there's two people that are fighting back against the like root monsters, and they're like, you need to help us. And so when you try to help them, like, they are just NPCs who you can like support, but they can also like take damage and they can die. And you get a different reward based on if they both die in the encounter, if only one survives, or if both of them survive. And the reward that you get if they both survive is a key to a building that's in that area that you go inside, and there's like a mini there's an SMG in that building, and you can only get that if they both survive. And keeping both of them alive for that encounter is really difficult. And the kicker is that it's a one and done encounter. Like if you die in the encounter, it's over. If one of them dies, they're permanently dead. Like there's no, oh shit, I fucked that up, let me turn the game off, turn it back on, try to do the encounter again. It's one and done. So that game, that gun is really hard to get unless you've got somebody specifically who can like heal those NPCs, you know, and keep like specifically keep them alive, because it's kind of a difficult encounter on its own anyway.
Right.
So also like beating it and keeping them alive is a really difficult thing to do.
Because NPCs are generally unpredictable. I don't remember these ones, but I mean, they'll run around like idiots. Like they'll run right into Karm's way and it's like, well, shit, but sometimes they won't. And then that would make it easier.
So it can just be a luck of the draw kind of thing. Right. But yeah, I would say the first game was definitely like a gen one of the concept, and two is very refined. I don't think the two is gen one of this concept.
It's the gen one smartphone to Remnant One's flip phone.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a very long way of saying that's what I've been doing this week.
All right, Matt.
Me?
Make it short.
And I'm playing another... No.
That was longer. That was dragging it one word.
That's, yeah. No, I played a bit... well, you and I were playing a bit of Remnant, which we just discussed, Tim. So we did that for a bit. We farmed some gear, and I got like the last mutator, I believe it was, is what we were after. I got my last mutator, which is good. So now I'm just working on leveling up the mutator and basically just getting better with the build. But I do a absolute shitload of damage now. I was at about 1,000 DPS before applying this build and slowly building it up. I'm at around 3,000, which is good. I mean, it's good for me. I don't know if it's good overall, but it's good for me. And it does melt bosses pretty well if I get a lot of critical hits, which is nice. I got to work on some healing and stuff, but I think that the mutator is going to come in for that, because I noticed some of that stuff is for my healing. Other than that, played a bit of RoboCop Rogue City. That game is fucking hilarious. I'm in the beginning, so I've done the intro mission, but I'm in the police station, and the police station is like, I mean, from what I remember, I've only seen the movie once or twice, but like that police station is like meticulously recreated, and you can run around and just do random side quests in it. They'll be like, Murphy, like come over here and help me. So the one guy calls me over to the front desk. He's like, this line's never going to get any shorter. Like, I need you to help me. And it's people coming into the police station to talk to the cops about whatever. And you get to deal with the situations as you see fit. So this one guy shows up and he's like, man, my neighbors keep complaining about how like my dog's around. And I you know, when I yell my dog's name, they're saying, you know, it's causing a big ruckus, like what's going on? And then you can be like, well, what's the dog's name? And he's like, the name is Fire. So when I yell his name, you know, Fire, Fire, come here, Fire. And everyone runs around and they think that it's crazy and you know, I'm causing a disturbance. And then you get to choose what to do, like, you know, tell him not to, or like whatever. But you can always uphold the law no matter what. So I chose like, I need to issue you a citation for yelling Fire. You know, you're causing a public disturbance. And he's like, that's okay. That's a small bit to pay for having the cutest dog in the marketplace or whatever, or in the neighborhood. There was another lady that, like, classic case. She's like, my son's missing. And you're like, oh, how old is he? And she's like, oh, he's 25 or 28 or something. And it's like, well, how long has it been? And it's like 48 hours. She's like, an adult needs to be missing for 72 hours. So you can make the choice to like look into it or uphold the law and be like, come back in 24 hours. So I'm doing a like uphold the law. Like I am RoboCop. So I sent her away. But the fucking hilarious encounter was this guy's like, yo man, like I see there's a poster over there and it's a wanted poster. And this guy is like, you know, any information leading to the arrest is worth 25K. He's like, I know where this guy is. And he'd be like, okay, like tell me where. And he's like, I'm right here. It's me. I'm the guy that's on the poster. And and he's like, so I get the money, right? And then you could, like, I mean, in my case, I just locked him up. I was like, you need to be taken under arrest. He's like, sweet man, but like, are you going to like transfer me the money? Like, I get the reward money, right? And you just like take him away. Just get him out of there. So,
you know, what's weird and like related to what you've said is that I just saw a video like yesterday. I don't know if it's true, but it was like a misconceptions video or something, clearing up misconceptions. And one of them was that there's actually no minimum amount of time that someone can be missing for before you can report them as a missing person.
Oh.
So it's like, it's funny that the game was like, they have to be missing for 72 hours before they can be reported missing. Apparently that's, unless it's, maybe it depends on like jurisdiction or like country. But maybe. Allegedly, it's there's no minimum time. Someone can be gone for 20 minutes. You can go to the cops and be like, they're missing.
They went to Tim Hortons and I don't know where they went. Meanwhile, it's just like a bit of a longer line. They're just
in traffic, yeah.
Yeah, a bit of a wait. But other than RoboCop, I also continued playing Starfield because I like to punish myself. I completed something big. I forget what it was now. Oh. I've completed all of the powers that the game is going to tell me about. You can talk to a character and he'll like tell you where to go. I have no more of those. I have five or six more. It appears to be unlockable on the little sort of like star map that shows the powers. And three more are in this playthrough. So I assume I have to like new game plus to, I don't know, RNG or however the heck you get those other ones. And then I can get those other ones. So that's cool. And I am... what is it that I did? I am working toward building my own ship. So I want to have like probably like 1.5 million credits. And I'm not min-maxing, like I'm going through and just sort of like doing missions and helping people and doing whatever. And I am, I'm at about 800,000-ish, but I am constantly buying ammo. So that's a big thing. And I had the most Bethesda fucking mission ever. I swear to God, I show up to this place. It's like, help these people. So I run in there, you know, you kill the raiders or the spacers. Someone's in a room, you open the room and it's an ally. They're like, thank you for saving me, blah, blah, blah. There's a bit of a story here where you have to go from group to group. You know, the infirmary's in trouble. These people are in trouble. That people are in trouble. And then it's like, these Marines are in trouble in the back room. So I run over there. I kill all the spacers. I open the door and this lady has a full conversation with me. And it's like, you know, have a conversation with her about having rescued, I'd assume, because the mission is to rescue her. So I talk to her and there's no like, hey, I rescued you or anything option. I exhaust all the speech options. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Close the game or go to main menu. I reload the game. I'm waiting around and I'm like, and it just keeps saying, you know, talk to this lady and rescue her. So I'm like, okay, what the fuck? So I turn around and I walk out of the room, but it's not a loading screen. It's just like a random door. And I leave the game running and I just go to Google. And I hear this commotion. I hear like, oh, there's like all this like combat. I'm like, what in the fuck's going on? I turn around and from one chevron, which is the quest marker, turn into about 15 chevrons. And every spacer that I was supposed to kill that didn't spawn, spawned in one fucking area. And it was chaos. Like they're running into each other. One guy beat the other guy up. Like it was like absolute fucking chaos. They're all supposed to be clearly all over the place. And they all spawned in the back room. So I just opened up with a minigun and that was the end of those spacers. but and then the mission continued. But what's really bad is I looked up this mission. Obviously, this mission has so many parts that can go wrong. Somebody's like, hey, mine got broken here. Mine got broken here. Mine got broken here. Because there's another three or four parts after this thing I just did. And no, like not a single person was complaining about where I had gotten caught. And I'm like, I'm adding to the pool of fucking errors with this quest. And it is so simple. Kill these people. Go talk to these people. Kill these people. Go talk to these people. Why is it like this mission is so broken? Anyway, that's Bethesda, baby. That's Starfield. So there's that. The new update came out. Some scanner improvements, which was kind of cool. It's a little more efficient. And there's some other updates that I never really noticed myself as of yet. So we'll see what's up. I'm also having trouble now. And I don't know if it's post-update or what. Maybe it's quick resume. Who knows? For some reason, my one gun doesn't shoot on aim anymore. Like the reticle is like in the center of the screen. I pull the gun out and the first shot always goes off to the right. And it's not me with bad aim. It's going off to the right. Like way the fuck off to the right. Like as if I'm like trying to bend bullets like fucking Angelina Jolie.
You got to update your vets.
Oh yeah, there are no vets in Starfield. This is NASA punk, bro. But that's, I believe that's been my week. That's the whole shebang.
Not too much for me. I was pretty busy this week. So I didn't get actually a lot of time to play much. I guess just Assassin's Creed Mirage, which I don't know if I said I started last week or not. I think I might have.
I think you did.
A good old Assassin's Creed. I guess the only other thing to mention is Call of Duty Warzone Mobile finally launched. I've been playing that. And what I've realized is I got this Backbone controller for the iPhone. And it's great when playing certain types of games. Probably more so like third person action kind of games. But in terms of shooters, I'm so picky about the right stick and how accurate it is. Now, I don't need crazy accuracy like PC accuracy with my, I obviously play shooters on the console with a controller, but it's just how small the analog stick is. It doesn't give enough movement to give you a good range of sensitivity, I guess. So when I'm shooting at someone, it's like, oh, I need to move it, my reticle, just like a bit to the right, and the stick will move it further than what I want it to, right? And that's where I get frustrated. So I've died a lot in Warzone. I know I'm a better player than that, but I've been dying because I've been using this Backbone controller. So that kind of sucks.
Well, you and I were discussing...
Craftsman blames their tools, Ryan.
Well, you and I were discussing, Ryan, as to whether it's the software's interpretation of the stick is better on the console than it would be on a phone.
Maybe, but I still just think it's the analog stick, right? It's tiny.
That's a good question. Like, I think you're correct, but I think it's also probably a little bit of the software. I will say, though, there are some indie games on the PS4, specifically that I've played, where, like, I think it's called Stranded Deep. It was a game it was a survival game they gave us for free, for PlayStation Plus. And that game, like, definitely feels like I'm moving a mouse around with the analog stick. So that doesn't feel good. So it's not like the PlayStation's interpretation of the controllers, like, affecting it completely, because obviously that game doesn't feel too good, in my opinion.
Right.
So I don't know. It's just a theory.
I can hook up a DualSense or an Xbox controller to my phone. Maybe I should give that a go and see how that feels.
That'd be a good check. That'd be a damn good test.
Just use the built-in screen controls, which I have. I'm decent at. So, all right, that's it. Tim, do your thing.
What's my thing?
I don't know.
Chicken wings.
I'm asking you. Tell us your thing.
You're making chicken wings next week, right? And selling them on an e-commerce store.
Yeah, but that's not related to this.
Could it be?
Selling fully cooked chicken wings on an e-commerce store. That's I don't like that at all.
With no preservation, international shipping. Yeah. So you just ship them like a dirty, dripping takeout container.
And it would still not be the worst food I'd ever had.
I don't... What is the worst food you've ever had?
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Twitch.tv/thesidetrack if you want to hang out with us. Well, I think we're going to be... I'm going to be getting into the epilogue a little bit of Red Dead next week. I don't know if there's like a difference if you play it high honor versus low honor, because there's like some story missions, but I think they go the way they go no matter what decisions you make. So we'll see. I can't remember. It's been a while. It's been like 2 or 3 years since I played it last, so we will see. But aside from that, I think we're going to start something else up new on the stream this week on Wednesday night.
Something.
So we got Exo Primal. Exo Primal, baby.
Oh.
So tune in for that if you want to see some co-op action. This game was on my radar when it was first announced, so I'm interested to get into it.
So am I, actually.
It should be some good multiplayer havoc, but we'll find out on Wednesday night. Twitch.tv/Day1PatchMedia.
All right, that's it. We'll see you guys next time.
Yo, peace.